bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. Yes, we're a day early. If you come up on Friday to watch us and we weren't there, well, at least you get to listen to the podcast. Never mind.
Sorry about that.
I thought I told everyone, but based on the fact that Chris has come here at the last minute, no, I hadn't. I do apologise. Joining me, Chris Forsman, Ars Technica writer, who is fantastic and a wonderful, wonderful photographer. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good.
How's the Wii one? Progressing well?
Yeah. Oh, darn it. Oh, we just had we had to go to a specialist OB yesterday.
Right.
And we're there for 3 hours. It was insane, but they had the most, like, the most amazing ultrasound machine, and we got the best ultrasounds, and now I don't know where they are.
Well, talking of ultrasounds, if you're Evan Rachel Wood, and I've got to say, I have no idea who this daft person is.
She's an actress.
Yes, who I've never heard of. But she's upset, apparently, because she emerged from her obstetrics clinic carrying a picture in plain sight of her ultrasound. Mm-hmm. And walked out and got snapped by a paparazzi who was stood in the park. And she then went to a Twitter tirade about how upset she was at the paparazzi for taking a picture of her unborn child. You sick paparazzi, I can't read the other word, hiding in the park after I came out of the hospital ultrasound. I can't stand this. You took a picture of my ultrasound photo. I couldn't be more furious now. I want to cry. My child isn't even born yet. I've got to say that if you're famous, you expect to have your picture taken. In fact, most of them really like the idea of having their picture taken. And if you would like something to remain private, you don't carry it openly in your right hand with it pointing towards where there would be someone stood with a camera.
Sure. They gave us an envelope at the doctor's office just to put them all in.
Just in case someone famous like yourself got their picture taken.
Exactly.
On the way out. There we go.
Because they knew.
Yeah. They knew there was paparazzi hanging around waiting for the Forsmans to come out.
Right. Yeah. They're like, you know, Chris Forsman from Ars Technica.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. Give him the privacy envelope.
Give him the privacy envelope. So there you go. She failed to pick up a privacy envelope. She failed to pick up anything other than a handbag and walked out. You deserve what you get, woman. You're in public. Anyone can take a picture of you. Learn to
I mean, okay, I understand. It sucks. I mean, you know, but you get to be famous and be in movies, so it's a trade-off.
I mean, you know, I'm not exactly famous. I mean, I just do these podcasts, but if someone comes up to me in the street and says, hello, can I talk to you? Yeah, okay. And if that happened all the time, it might get a bit distressing, but then I'd be earning so much money, I wouldn't need to be in public anyway. So
right.
I'd send someone out to be in public for me.
You'd have
handlers
and you'd have a
bodyguard.
Armored Land Rover, right?
That's right. I'd live in the hills. Now the chat room's telling me I got a helium speech. I did ask you before I started, but I'm not changing it now. Sorry.
Sorry about that.
Unless it's coming out on the main audio. That would be the only reason I'd stop.
I've got Newfie's speech today.
I don't know if it's coming out on the main audio. Well, we'll fix it if we have to. Never mind. Right, the other stories. The proper stories. Jessups, it seems, have been in real hot water. I mean, you thought that they just went bumpoing a couple of people, but the list is endless. It apparently turns up to they owed around £80 million to suppliers. They've got 42.6 million of those now listed creditors. Canon, they owed Canon somewhere in the region of £20 million, which is just not something that's funny.
That's a lot of 5D mark.
It is, yeah, and the stock won't be returning because they only had a couple of million in stock available to send back to suppliers. They owed the taxman more than £1.3 million, and they also had unredeemed gift cards to the value of £850,000. Not looking like a good buy, but they're talking about the flagship reopening in Oxford Street as well, with the brand name still Jessups. I keep saying this brand name's got to be crap. You'd run a mile from this, wouldn't you?
I would think so, yes.
They owed Panasonic $4 million, Sony UK $3.2 million, Fujifilm $2.6 million. Jessup's debt to Samsung was $1.2 million. Good grief. And also, they got an academy course running. And they owed the bankers HSBC $28 million. So if you got a Jessup store card, unlike HMV, it's looking like you will not be getting it back, unfortunately. But then again, why would you buy it anyway?
I'm just saying, I owe, you know, several $1,000s in student loans, and my credit's horrible. These guys owe millions.
Yeah.
Millions.
You get to a certain point, though, where you owe so much money that that you can't salvage it. They're in more trouble. The people that have lent you the money are in more trouble than you are. Sony have been quizzed about their impending release of something in between the RX1 and the RX100. Now, it came out through a conversation. There was a launch of the RX1, and they talked to Mr. Masaki Oshima, who should have been in, it sounds like he should have been in Karate Kid, but he's actually well up in Sony. And he said there is an RX1, and they said, what about something in between the interchangeable lens RX1 and the compact RX100? And he said, we haven't decided yet. Does this get you salivating, Chris, or you really couldn't care less? Because this is a good camera by all accounts.
Yeah, I mean, the RX1's, well, it's got that amazing 24 megapixel full frame sensor that's in some of these. I think it's the same one or a similar one they're using in some of the Nikon cameras. It's the same ones in their like top end alpha camera now. You know, so you have this amazing sensor, you know, and basically it's sort of an extreme, you know, kind of pro advanced amateur oriented little compact camera. So, you know, that's really exciting. And let's be fair, the RX100 too is still like an enthusiast compact. I'm not sure that there needs to be something between the two.
Yeah, I mean, the RX1's got the interchangeable lenses. But I mean, what they'd be talking about there is hinting at making a bridge camera. And if you've got a decent interchangeable lens camera that's got a very compact body and short lenses, I would have thought there'd be no need to go for a bridge. What would the point be? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and they've got the NEX series, so what are they going to put in between there? I mean, they've already got it.
And then they've got the full end, the double A. What's it? What's the series? The Alpha series.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't see the need for something in between, and you know, this is something I've commented on like 100 times. Like, camera companies do not need to make more different models. They need to make less. They need to make it very clear to consumers what they're choosing. Because I am telling you, like, people ask me all the time what camera to get because they are scared to make a choice. There's so many choices. They don't know what to pick.
But I mean, this is part of the point we were saying the other day, or the other week, that you can't buy a crap compact anymore. Even at the £40 mark, they're actually producing very acceptable photos. They're not going to be great in low light. They're not going to fill a room with light off the little tiny flashes that are on them. But if you want a point and shoot for the nightclub, or one for the kids to play with and then give you back when they've dropped it in some water, there's not really a bad buy out there, is there?
Right. I mean, it's like even crappy cameras now are decent. You know, I mean, it's even like in the 90s, you know, the crappiest film camera you could buy was still really good compared to the compacts of, you know, the 70s and 80s. You could get pretty, really good snapshots and like without even trying.
I think you're right in what you said there about, well, why would you make something else?
Yeah.
If it's not just you're just filling a brand line for the sake of it. So.
Yeah. I've, you know, Canon wheeled me into this press thing at CES, and they just had like a dozen cameras that were all looked almost the same and had slightly different specs and were like $10-$15 apart. And it's just undaunting. You know, the companies always try to tell me like, oh, well, you know, retail, blah, 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 blah. I was like, you don't care about the retail channels and all this stuff. Care about the people who buy them, because they're the ones that have to decide between all this crap. And if you make it hard for them to decide, they're just not going to make a decision. They're just not going to get anything.
We shall see. Cameron Mater If it comes, it comes. A Cameramator was a fantastic little device that was outed at Macworld, which fits onto your hot shoe and allows you camera control via your iOS device. Now, everyone went wow at this, and we covered it in the show, and it was brilliant. But they only had pricing for the UK, for the US, and for California. If you bought it in California, it could cost you $299 plus tax. If you bought it anywhere else in the US, it was $299 with free shipping. They've now released a price for international orders in Cure in Europe, and it's €349. That's about $469. You thieving bastards. Now,
yeah, blame me.
I did write to their press office this morning, hoping that I'd get a reply for the show, so I didn't have to call them thieving bastards before before it was necessary. But they've really hiked the price on this. The actual conversion rate is £202 or £194 or €202 if you look at the current exchange rate on the dollar. I don't know why. This looks like price gouging to me, but I think the other problem that they've got, and unless this is a typo, it should be €249, which I think would be more acceptable. They've just priced themselves out of the market. No one's going to buy it at that. They've halved their sales by an instant.
Well, and this sounds like a small company, not like...
It's a Kickstarter project.
Right, right. Mm. So, I mean, when you're talking about global distribution... That's easy for someone like Canon that has, Canon has like three huge offices here in Chicago alone.
Oh, I am, Chris. Before we go too far down that story, do bear in mind it's €349 plus shipping. So this isn't coming from a warehouse in Basingstoke in bulk that they've already shipped over and they're not charging you a penny extra and there's import tax already paid. You run the risk, you buy this thing from their offices in California, you're going to have to pay shipping on top, which is probably going to be £60 maybe, and then if they haven't paid tax on it for you, you're going to get a bill for probably £15 for the VAT, and you're going to get a £10 surplus charge on that because FedEx or DHL have paid it for you for your convenience. So there's another £25 on the bill. You could be paying the best part of £400 here to get this device. This thing is never going to sell anywhere else in the world at this point.
Okay, then I take back what I said.
They are a bunch of thieving bastards. Let's hope it's a typo. If it's a typo, I'll withdraw my statement and I'll withdraw the name calling. I just want to give a shout out as well to Bournemouth Cycle Works. If you type in Bournemouth Cycle Works into Google, they're a bike shop, but they do tons and tons of GoPro accessories and stuff like that as well. And I needed two little special GoPro accessories today. And I rang them up at short notice and said, can you get them for me? I'd ordered them on the website and they said, we haven't got that stock level. We've only got one of them at the moment. And they pulled out all the stops and they got the item for me. And it arrived this morning for a job tomorrow. So they've saved my bacon. Thank you very much. Bournemouth Cycle Works. You're absolutely brilliant. If you want any GoPro stuff, give them a go. Unless you know we're near England, because then it's going to be really pricey.
Yeah.
The guy that invented iStock Photo has created Stocksy United. He's come out with this idea that he wants to give more back to the photographers, which, personally speaking, of my experience of stock image warehouses and that kind of stuff, is no bad thing. Typically, they're going to take 30%. I mean, I'm registered with... Alamy, they take 30% of the sale price of any of my images, and I haven't sold an image on there for probably 4 years. And because there's like 35 million images on there. This guy, Bruce Livingston, created iStock Photo but sold it to Getty. Getty are mired with some kind of licensing controversy over pictures, and he's just gone off and started this Stocksy up. But he's talking about, and this is quite interesting, just on general stock sales, he's going to give 50% of regular sales back to the photographer, which is fantastic. And he's talking about 100% of extended license sales go directly to the photographer, which is brilliant. He's only taking the initial cut. Is this going to go somewhere? Because, I mean, the problem is the amount that they take, yes, but also trying to find an image in a stock image website is just almost painful now.
Yeah, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack almost.
Yeah, I mean, you must use stock image quite a bit, I would have thought, for articles.
Yeah, yeah. And for a while we were using a service, I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, and where, like, most of these, you know, like our art director would have to log in, and I just remember one service that we had where they were okay if like the other writers logged in using the same login, and so we could, you know, when he wasn't around or whatever, we could log in and find our own. And I remember just like, so, you know, sometimes, you know, you find a good image, sometimes you find one that you've seen already, so you have to find something else. You know, because a lot of times people are lazy and just like, oh, here's the first search result, I'll use that. But sometimes you just could not, you just couldn't find what you were looking for. Like, you couldn't put together the right search terms because you had this idea in your head. And it was just, you know.
What is this?
How do I illustrate this? How do I put in the right search terms to get what I'm looking for? And it can, you know, and there are, like, you know, there's dozens of different stock places you can go to on top of that. And then you've got to, you know, try to search multiple ones. If you can't find one at the other, you got to go to a different one. And I mean, there's so much out there that I like the idea of where he's going, but, you know, what are they going to do that's different besides paying the photographers? What are they going to do that's different for people who are trying to choose good photography? And that, I think that's where a stock agency can really, you know,
there needs to
set
be
itself apart.
Yeah, I think the old idea of keywording is something that's got to be enhanced upon now, because a lot of people aren't very good at keywording, and I think I would put myself in that category. I'm not the best keyworder in the world. I don't look at the ephemeral stuff. I tend to just say what's in the image, you know, so that the warm and fuzzy stuff, like this is business or this is warmth or this is the emotional things that go along with it, I tend to avoid those keywords just because I don't think of them. It's not in my nature. But also the quality of the image, because there's a lot of stuff going on now that's coming off iPhones, got Instagram filters on it, and people are putting it up. And guys are using it because it's great for an article in something. They've got to pay $5 for it, and it's done. But the $5 image is now separating from the $7,000 image. I mean, I sold an image for some pamphlet stuff in Geneva for breast cancer, and I made a lot of money off that. I made a couple of grand. You know, that kind of – but that was a huge – TIFF file,
yeah,
and that stuff's not, you know, it's all mired in now with the other crap stuff. That's the problem. That's where someone needs to make that separation, and that's where the new business is, I think, in stock.
I think too, there's maybe like an opportunity for sort of like almost like a stock concierge, like where you describe what you're looking for, and then they help you find it. You know, like, I mean, you know, and it's,
and you'd pay for it.
Yeah, you'd pay extra. I'd pay an extra, you know, $5, $10, $20 sometimes if I knew that I could get the right image, or I knew I could get a really good image that really illustrated the idea that I had.
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
Okay. A Spanish designer has come out with a wonderful hanging headlamp. There you go. This is a Nikon 12 to 24, was it?
Mm-hmm. No, 14 to 24
lens. And it's, it's huge. There's a picture of a guy's hand next to it here. It's a dining table kind of lens. And it's got a petal hood, thank you. Simple word, that you can use. And what's really kind of cool with it is you can turn the petal hood the other way up and lock it back on again. It acts just like the real thing.
Yeah.
And the detail on this thing's amazing. It's $689, though, if you want to buy one. Yeah. That's a lot of money. But, I mean, got to say, I put in the dock a fancy one of these, do you?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, I really like doing theme decorations.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you're going to go with a theme, you have to go all the way. You can't half-ass it.
No.
So if you're going to have, like, a photography theme for a room, you have to have one of these.
I think so.
You have to. And it's, I mean, you know, it's totally like made out of, I mean, it's like.
It must weigh a ton because it looks like it's been hollowed out of a single tree cut trunk.
Right. And I mean, the lens hood works.
Yes.
The bayonet's on and off, and you can flip it around, like you said. And I mean, the markings on the lens look almost identical to the real thing.
They're accurate.
I mean, it's just the level of detail and attention to detail is just, it's perfect.
It is.
Perfect.
It is good. You got to have one. If they come down in price and they're available at IKEA, I'll go get one. Now, if you like your iPhone photography, Photo Jojo have started the Photo Jojo University. Now, we do like Photo Jojo. They are going to bankrupt me at some point, I'm sure of it. But they've started an idea whereby they will teach you to take a better picture with your iPhone, and all it is in the form of an email that comes through. And they want $5 to get you started. That's for enrollment. It doesn't say how long it lasts on the press release. And it doesn't say how frequently the emails are, but you get tutorials in short emails, unquote. It's a nice idea, but I think you've got to just say that the cynic in me just thinks it's an end result to A, get $5 out of you, but also B, start selling you all the little glyph stuff and that kind of thing that they put on.
Brilliant marketing.
Okay, well, good on them then.
It's going to work. It's going to work. I'm telling you, this is going to work.
How many do you think you get big sign-ups on this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're already putting some stuff up that's free, though, which has to be good. But maybe that's just the drug sell before they go on to the main stuff.
Yeah. Here's your first hit of meth. Or
special introductory price. Enroll now. If you go to photojojo.com/university, you can sign up for the fundamentals of phone photography. And then when you've done that, you can go to Roll 8 and you can buy yourself a printer. You take your Android or iOS device or anything that's enabled with the PhotoSync stuff and plug it in. And away you go. You print your stuff out. You can do, I'm guessing this is a 4-inch wide roll because all the images that they mention have got 4 inches in them. And they reckon you can print up to 18 inches long with a single image, which will cope with the panoramic stuff off your iPhone. And the prices are, it's $159 for it on its own. The Wi-Fi version is €179, sorry, not dollars. And a 36 borderless print up to 10 by 15 centimeter format are $13.99, which doesn't sound that bad. And it's Dyson as well. It's not bubble jet or anything like that.
Right.
What do you think?
This is like awesome for like parties.
Oh,
awesome for parties.
Plug in and go.
Yeah. And it's got a little, you know, it's got the Wi-Fi one too, would be, you know, you can use your AirPrint with it, but then it's got a USB slot and a dock slot, so you can just pop on the devices and plug in your Android devices and transfer pictures. So it looks like it works with about anything. You know, the smartphone or tablet wise, even digital cameras, you know, that use PicBridge. I mean, almost all of them that I've seen have PicBridge. So you just plug it in and be USB and you can just pick a picture and hit print and it'll come out too. So,
yeah.
Sweet. This would be sweet at parties.
It would be good. It would be good. As I say, what's nice as well is if you look at the 4x18, that's going to be a fairly good sized picture that will go on a mantelpiece or something if you can get a frame to fit it. But you'll take your panorama off iPhone. It looks nice, and it's piano black, and it's shiny, and it'll sit good on the desk. We like it.
Well, and definitely, like, if you do, I don't know if you are a DJ that works at weddings or whatever.
No, I'm not, but
or a photographer that does weddings, even, you know, you could bring this with you.
Be good to little takeaways,
I know. A friend of mine has a studio in Indiana, and I assist with weddings with him on occasion, and he has kind of an older Canon camera or printer that does something like this, but you got to hook it up to the laptop and everything. This would be great where you could just plug the camera right into it. And I've got the 60 now with built-in Wi-Fi. I could literally hook it up to this printer over Wi-Fi wirelessly and just click it, make prints. So what's really fun to do is we'll set up a little background kind of off to the side in the reception hall, and people can just come in anytime they want and get like a family kind of photo, or just them and their friends or whoever's there together, and we just snap a picture and hand them a print right on the spot. And, people love it at the weddings. You know, because back in the day, they used to put all the disposable cameras on the table and everybody would take pictures and you have to go and drop them off, and most of the pictures suck anyway. But this is great. Like, you know, the people at the wedding get all these pictures of their guests that they can have, and they can do whatever they want with it, but then the guests that are there get a little snapshot they can take with them.
Well, don't forget as well, didn't we cover that story the other week about there being a disposable digital camera?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be naturally have picked the bridge as well, maybe, that you could just put that in. So you can still get your crappy photos. They don't have to be good quality.
Yeah.
That'd be nice. ever thought you'd like to take a picture of the sun? Well, an amateur photographer in New York has done just that with some unbelievable images. I've got to say, I looked at this article and thought, oh, that's quite interesting. And I started reading it, and I started looking at the images that were down there, and I fell in love with some of the pictures. His name's Alan Friedman. Yeah. He does an awful lot of stuff that's out there on the web. But the pictures, the detail in them are fantastic. In the article it says it looks like something that you'd see under a microscope, and it really does. He's put loads of coloured filters on these things to soften it. He's also protecting his eyes. Don't try this at home with just by looking through a telescope, for God's sake.
I used to have a special filter for my telescope that was so you could look at the sun.
Yeah.
It's like super dark and kind of red.
It's kind of like almost welder's mask stuff, isn't it? You know, that kind of level. But he's got a lot more detail in these, whereas normal, just dimming it, just tends to make it look like a solid ball. That's his setup, and he's got something that looks very akin to a GoPro or some kind of action camera that's linked up to the back end of the telescope to look through, and then linked to his laptop. But well done, Alan, mate. We really enjoy those. I thought your images were stunning. I love that one especially. The textures on it are amazing. All kinds
of crazy, like, flares and swirls and...
Yeah. I'm getting into my astrophotography. I've just bought myself a collimator because I've worked out that when I looked at the longer distance stuff, I wasn't getting the right... it wasn't lined up properly. So I'm getting better there. But the problem with it is, and I find this really... I think photography amateurs feel... is that lots of stuff arrives and there's no bloody instructions on how to use it or what to do with it or how it links with something else and what the effect will be if you put this with this or that with that. And you feel like asking someone, but then you feel like you're a real pain in the arse and a bit of a numpty and you don't want to trouble people. But I've had some great people. Thank you, Inspector Gadget. Thanks to Darren Griffin as well as in the chat room. He's helped me out a great deal. But I feel stupid. I hate it. You just feel like you should know something. Of course, you shouldn't, because it's a completely different branch of photography. It's not the same at all. Yeah. D-Link webcams. There we go. They can be very cheaply modded to hang off your telescope. Thank you very much for that, chat room. That was from, I think that was from Darren.
But he's just using webcams to get these images?
Yeah, he's just using standard cameras that are linked off by I think the picture I put up there, he's just got
this is industrial webcam.
Yeah. But nonetheless, there's an awful lot of people that are just dropping the eyepieces in and then just... I mean, Darren's got a fantastic picture he showed the other week on Twitter of the moon with Jupiter in the background, and all he did was hold his iPhone up to the eyepiece of his telescope to get some cracking stuff out there that's easily done.
What he might be doing, so another thing he might be doing too, is it says it can capture up to 120 frames per second.
Mm.
So there's this technique where you can use multiple images,
stacking them,
and it's not just simple stacking, but it can be analyzed, and you can actually get more detail than you could just from a single frame.
Yeah.
Like it somehow, like, you know, because even
comparison.
The setup, like, yeah, even this awesome setup that he has, there's going to be like all these slight movements from like the air moving across it and the movement of the earth relative to the sun and everything. It's going to be all these little tiny movements. And then there's like software that can actually analyze these small differences between frames and actually generate more detail. I've seen some examples of it. It's really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, they do a thing where they where you get you take black reference frames of your camera. I can't remember what they called it, but you effectively put the lens cap on and you just expose and expose and expose and expose, and you take about a dozen images, and then you overlay those, and it'll show you which are the pixels that burn out, and then you can adjust for those in the software afterwards. I can't remember the name of the piece of software. Someone did tell me, but that's supposed to improve your images. My problem at the moment is because I've got a Dobsonian and it's huge. It's 4 foot long and it's 150 mil mirror on the end. But those suckers move fast. Even Jupiter. Mm-hmm. Bloody hell. It's moving like you wouldn't believe. So I need to get a motorised base or something for it. But I don't know if they're doing for the dump sightings. There we go. Questions. It's time for questions.
We got questions.
We had a couple of questions. Let's see the first one. Hi, guys. First, I'd like to apologise for taking so long to ask a question. I found your podcast in November and I've been trying to catch up with them ever since. That's all right. No worries, mate. If you'd like to send us a question, send it to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and we'll read it out. All the questions that come in, we answer. Anyway, my question's a little late in asking because I've already purchased the lens, but I'd still like to know what your opinions on the matter are. I bought the 70-200 f2.8 version 2. My question would have to be to you. I'm interested in taking photographs of dragonflies, and I've been using my 100L macro up until now, and I need to have a little bit more reach with the two lenses I was looking at. It was the 70-200L, which you bought, and the Canon 70-300L. I went with the 70-200 as the 2.8 would give me more light because I need the faster shutter speeds for the dragonflies up to 35 miles an hour. And we don't seem to ever get any sunshine in England anymore anyway. It would be better to have a sharpness of the 70-200 and crop to the same size as the 300, or have the less sharp image from 70-300 and not crop. I've also bought a 2x converter for this lens as I've been invited into Brands Hatch for the taking of photos of the Morgan Club race. Any tips to do with Brands Hatch would also be great to hear. I've never been there, mate. I've got a Pitax as well, so my camera is a 70, and I've got the 24-105L lens as well. Philip Holloway from sunny Sussex, unquote. Go on then, mate. So, choice on lenses. I think I've got to say virtually that's a no-brainer. I think he's taken the right choice, no?
Mm-hmm. The only other thing I would suggest is they have a rather expensive, Canon has rather expensive, I think it's 180 millimeter macro. But it's hard to say what his issue is. Like, is it that he needs to be further away but still get more magnification? That's not 100% clear, but you know, that might be, I mean, it might be something to consider. And I don't know, in the UK, if you have something like, you know, rentalens.com or whatever, or
camera. Yeah, can you do rental of lenses? And I've said to a few people in the last couple of weeks, go rent it. It'll cost you £20 for the weekend with a deposit.
Yeah. So, yeah, check out that 180 millimeter macro lens that Canon makes, and see if that, you know, like I said, it's worth trying just for the weekend or whatever they charge.
I mean, you're shooting a 7D, which is a crop frame sensor anyway.
Yeah.
So you're already shooting effectively 300 mil. So that's not going to be that big an issue for you. I think you're going to get maximum zoomage. You're going to get maximum increase in size there. And also as well, if you're using something like, if you've got Photoshop or something like that does good interpolation for upscale, or if you use fractals, then you're going to get a really, really good upsized image anyway to crop later if you want to come down to it. I think that's the right lens for you. It's fast as well. It's fast on focus. Forget about necessarily shutter speed, because shutter speed, if you've got f4, if you've got the 2x converter, or when you're already up to f5.6 anyway. But the key thing with a dragonfly is you want to be able to point, and especially if you use it in autofocus, you want that thing to hit and focus and shoot in a very, very short space of time. And having that lens, I can tell you it does. Sorry, Chris. Yeah.
No, I was going to say the same thing. The 7200, it's just the focus just snaps. So you're totally right.
Registax apparently is the piece of software that I should have thought about for the solar for the lens on your camera for telescopes. There we go. Thank you. Cheers for the question, Philip. Very, very good. Next one.
Oh,
go on.
I just wanted to. He also mentioned at the very end talking about shooting racing pictures.
All right.
So I just wanted to briefly say, practice your panning technique. The most dramatic pictures are going to be at the corners, or doing some long pans along the straights.
And don't forget to switch your mode as well, because I think one is vertical mode and two is horizontal mode, or the other way around. So on that lens, there's two separate modes of image stabilization, and one is good for up and down, and one is good for left and right. I think one is left and right, and two is up and down. I haven't used it. Question two. Okay, wise guys, says Norman.
A wise guy, eh?
I'm not sure how to take this one, but he has put a smiley at the end of the sentence. You may not be able to answer this one quite so swiftly, but you did ask the questions. All I want to do is only use iTunes. Now, I think what he's saying there is iPhoto, And it's auto-corrected, so bugger Apple Correct. We're going to assume, Norman, that you only want to use iPhoto for correcting your photos, because I don't think iTunes does it anyway. I'm an experienced former professional selling specifying image workflow software. I'm now retired. I've not really ever sorted out what may be the holy grail of image editing, however. Fast cropping, simple straightening, and then an output only of the cropped version of the image. So far, so good, and it can be achieved by mixing and matching a variety of applications. He's aware of other pieces of the software, but he thinks Photoshop is overpriced and inappropriate for the process. Selecting multiple crops, output as cropped, and ITPC workflow. This is a typical old farts problem when you want to digitize your family content, and I still see similar problems with some of my old customers in stock agencies. It's a matter of speed, but it's pretty labor intensive. Current workflow is to scan the old photo albums. He's got a fast Canon photo scanner that does up to 600 by 600 DPI with good colour. Good enough for anything up to A3 in a second or two. I attach a copy of a scanned problem drawn out. Let me just show that picture because I have got it and I did queue it up and it's bloody gone. Where has it gone? There we go. And I'm not sure which is you in the bad dicky bow here, Norman, but and there's large... the intent is not to have iPhoto cluttered up with large areas of crap and disk space in pictures that are often soft cropped for display. In my humble opinion, excess data in an imaging system is always an issue. I have old clients with 6 to 10 terabytes of data. My current workflow is to use iPhoto to straighten a picture one, iPhoto to crop picture one, duplicate the image and then paste it, straighten picture two, crop picture two, export the two images cropped and delete the two originals, import cropped images. And then that's it.
Yeah.
My first thought was that that's making it more complicated than it needs to be. But what's your view?
Well, here's the rub that he's trying to work around. What iPhoto does is you import an image, and it always keeps a copy of that original round. So no matter how you crop it and edit it and tweak it and do whatever, there's a command you can go and just do revert to original. You can always get back to that original, and it keeps it around. And I understand why he doesn't want to, but I think he's also missing the reason why that's done. Is if, what if you screw up? What if you make a mistake? What if you accidentally delete?
Yeah, you know? I mean, I think iPhoto, I mean, one of the things that he's missing in this is that iPhoto isn't designed for you to take your old images, digitize them, and put them into either collages or separated image scans. Yeah. It's a library stock for what you've already currently got with minor editing capability.
And it also sounds like what he's doing is he's like maybe taking an old photo album page, scanning the whole page, and then cropping each picture separately out of it, right?
Yeah.
Right, so, I mean, the easiest workaround I can think of for this whole problem and still be able to use iPhoto is when you scan an image, mobile scanner software allows you to just draw a box around the part that you just that's the part you want to scan, and it's more work because you have to, you know, if there's six photos on the page, you got to go through and scan each one separately. But it will avoid all this like Duplicate, crop, you know, delete, re-import. So, you know, if iPhoto is what you're going to do, and there's nothing wrong with, I mean, you know, it'll catalog and sort the images, and you can use the face recognition and tag all your people and all that stuff. There's nothing wrong with that inherently.
Well, the only thing I'd say is if you're looking for
if you have a large library, I would say move to Lightroom. But I don't think Lightroom is going to necessarily address the problem that he's saying that he has, which is the fact that the software is going to keep duplicates around, and Lightroom will do the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he's talking there about looking for the holy grail of workflow within image editing, and then wants to use iPhoto. It's not built for what you're asking it to try and do, Norm. It doesn't, it's built for the average person who wants to take all the photos that they've got, store them and be able to find them, and maybe just get a little bit better. You probably even use the auto correct function more than anything else. I had a similar issue myself. My aunt had a pile of photos dating back for the last 70 years of the family, and there was probably around 400 images in this box, and they were all loose. Some of them were pretty bad condition. And one of the things that I did was lay them out as square as I possibly could on the scanner bed and then scan all of them at the highest possible resolution I could. I use Photoshop to do this, but there's no reason you can't use Essentials to do this at 50 quid. Don't forget, you can straighten your selection of your crop. So you scan this image that comes up as a standard image in Photoshop. You open it as a JPEG or a TIFF. You then drag out a selected area. You can rotate that selected area to straighten against the image, and then just do command and copy. And once you've done that, the next time you, if you go to file open, it will automatically create an image that or a paper that's the size of the current crop that you have. So then when you do that, you drop the photo in and you just do save as and put it out as anything that you like to anywhere that you like. And then you can go back to the original image, drag out to the next one and rotate to try and find the straightness that you want and left edge, right edge crop and that kind of stuff. Command copy. That will automatically, when you create a new document, give the exact paper size, you paste it in and you save it as. It's a far slicker workflow, and it gets even easier if the image is already straight against the print. You get yourself up a piece of graph paper and use a bit of spray mount or something and gently tack them against something that's already square, and then be very careful when you mount it in your scanner that it stays square. A lot of pre-work, a little bit of pre-work certainly on that kind of stuff, improves workflow immensely because you're missing stages out. But that would be my view. I would use Photoshop in what I currently have, and you can use Essentials for it, and I would use the tools in Photoshop because that's what it's built for. It's built to improve your image flow. You could do the import using an Automator script, but you couldn't straighten using Automator. There's no way of giving it a reference point, is there? So I can't see that you'd have. I think you got the wrong tool for the job there, mate, is my view.
There are some scanning software options out there too that you can put multiple images on the scanner, scan it, and it'll recognize them, automatically crop and rotate them, and in my experience, you know,
but it'll do it against a visible area, it won't do it against content, will it?
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're paying 15 quid for iPhoto and you want to do all of that stuff and you want an easy job doing it, Norm, I wouldn't be a tight ass. I'd buy Essentials. It'll do just fine. There you go. If you've got a question, send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. We'll answer it. There you go. We even answered Norm's question.
We dare you.
We dare you. We are wise guys, apparently. Where can we get a hold of you, Christopher?
Until tomorrow afternoon, you can definitely get a hold of me at ArsTechno.com. As I mentioned last show, I'm starting a new job on Monday doing development work, but I'm going to stay on at Ars and do some occasional feature work, so you can still find me there if you like, but I'll always be on the Twitters, just
excellent, mate.
Cussing up a storm.
Yeah, whenever you get the chance, come and join us on the photo show as well, pal. It's been good having you. Thank you ever so much for your time over the years. It's been wonderful.
Great, yeah.
This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. If you want anything for the web, if you want somewhere to store your photos, they'll give you a server. You can make your own cloud system up, stuff Apple at the price that they're at. And they'll let you choose bandwidth costs up to as much as you like. Every service that they've got, we've got an offer code for British Tech. We're the only place that does it. So go to our place, britishtechnetwork.com, and then go to the sponsors page, click on the UK2 logo, buy what you want to buy, come back and use the offer codes because they'll know we sent you, we get the kudos, and they'll carry on supporting us, because if they went away, the network would go away. There wouldn't be any shows. We haven't got the money for the bandwidth, I'm afraid. UK2.net, thanks for their support. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back again next week. Who knows who's going to be on the show, because it's me doing the bookings. You never can tell. See you next week. Bye. Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.